Vishnu Padaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 19, Text Number 3, I think. Yes? There's no. Because it's prose, right? Okay.
Om Namo Namo Bhagavate Uttamashlokaya Nama Aya Lakshana Shila Vritaya Nama Upasikshitatmana Upasita Lokaya Nama Saruvada Nikasanaya Namo Brahmanya Devaya Mahapurushaya Maharajaya Nama Iti. Om. Translation. Let me please your lordship by chanting the Bija Mantra, Omkara. I wish to offer my respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, who is the best among the most highly elevated personalities. Your lordship is the reservoir of all the good qualities of Aryans, people who are advanced. Your character and behavior are always consistent, and you always control your senses and mind. Acting just like an ordinary human being, you exhibit exemplary character to teach others how to behave. There is a touchstone that can be used to examine the quality of gold, but you are the touchstone that can verify all good qualities. You are worshipped by Brahmins, who are the foremost of all devotees. You, the Supreme Person, are the King of Kings, and therefore I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. There's no comment next verse in purport. Yadtad vishudhana bhava matramekam svatejasa dhasta guna vyavastam pratyak prashantam sudiyopalambanam hyanama rupam niraham prapadye. Translation. The Lord whose pure form, Satchidananda Vigraha, is uncontaminated by the modes of material nature, can be perceived by pure consciousness. In the Vedanta, he is described as being one without a second. Because of his spiritual potency, he is untouched by the contamination of material nature. And because he is not subjected to material vision, he is known as transcendental. He has no material activities, nor has he a material form or name. Only in pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness, can one perceive the transcendental form of the Lord. Let us be firmly fixed at the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra, and let us offer our respectful obeisances unto those transcendental lotus feet. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, appears in various expansions, as stated in the Brahma Sanghita. Ramadi Murtishu Kalaniyamena Tishtan Nanavatara Makaro Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna Svayam Samabhavat Parama Pumanyo Govindam Aripurusham Tamaham Pajami. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, who is always situated in various incarnations, such as Rama, Nisinga, and many sub-incarnations as well, but who is the original personality of Godhead, known as Krishna, and who incarnates personally also. Krishna, who is Vishnu Tattva, has expanded himself in many Vishnu forms, of which Lord Ramachandra is one. We know that the Vishnu Tattva is carried by the transcendental bird Garuda and is equipped with different types of weapons and four hands. Therefore, we may doubt whether Lord Ramachandra could be in the same category since he was carried by Hanuman, not by Garuda, and had neither four hands, nor the Shankha, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. Consequently, this verse clarifies that Ramachandra is as good as Krishna, Ramadi Murti Shukala. Although Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ramachandra is not different from him. Ramachandra is unaffected by the modes of material nature, and therefore he is prashanta, never disturbed by those modes. Unless one is saturated with love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot appreciate the transcendental value of Lord Ramachandra. One cannot see him with material eyes. Because demons, like Ravana, have no spiritual vision, they consider Lord Ramachandra an ordinary Kshatriya king. Ravana therefore attempted to kidnap Lord Ramachandra's eternal consort, Sita Devi. Actually, however, Ravana could not carry off Sita Devi in her original form. As soon as she was touched by Ravana's hands, she gave him a material form, but she maintained her original form beyond his vision. Therefore, in this verse, the words Pratyak Pashantam indicate that Lord Ramachandra and his potency, the goddess Sita, keep themselves aloof from the influence of the material energy. In the Upanishads, it is said, Yam evaisha vinute tena labhya. The Supreme Lord, Paramatma, the Personality of Godhead, can be seen or perceived only by persons who are saturated with devotional service. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, 538, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena Santaksadaiva Hidayeshu Vilokayanti Yam Shyam Sundaram Achintya Gunasurupam Govindam Aripurusham Damaham Bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotee whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of Shyama Sundar, situated within the heart of the devotee. Similarly, in the Chandogya Upanishad it is stated, Etas tisro devata anena jivena. In this verse of the Chandogya Upanishad, the word anena is used to distinguish the Atma and Paramatma as two separate identities. The words tisro devata indicate that the body of the living entity is made of three material elements, fire, earth, and water. Although the Paramatma enters the heart of the Jivatma, who is influenced and designated by a material body, the Paramatma has nothing to do with the Jivatma's body. Because the Paramatma has no material connections, he is described here as Anama Rupam Niraham. The Paramatma has no material identity, whereas the Jivatma does. The Jivatma may introduce himself as an Indian, American, German, and so on, but the Paramatma has no such material designations, and therefore he has no material name. The Jivatma is different from his name, but the Paramatma is not. His name and he himself are one and the same. This is the meaning of Niraham, which means without material designations. This word cannot possibly be twisted to mean that the Paramatma has no ahankara, no I-ness or identity. He has his transcendental identity as the Supreme. This is the explanation given by Srila Jiva Goswami. According to another interpretation given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Niraham means Nirnishchayena aham. Niraham does not mean that the Supreme Lord has no identity. Rather, the stress given by the word aham proves strongly that he does not have his personal identity, because nir not only means negative, but also means strong ascertaining. That he does have his personal identity, because nir not only means negative, but also means strong ascertainment. Turubhyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha
patitanam bhavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha.
So, these two verses that we read today were spoken, were prayers offered by Hanuman to his worshipful Lord Ramachandra. I believe this chapter begins by describing how Hanuman resides in the Kimpurusha Varsha. He's always engaged there with the inhabitants of that land in devotional service to Lord Ramachandra. And he's always absorbed in hearing the glories of his worshipful Lord. And I think that there is some, yes, Arishtashena, the chief person of that planet, he's always constantly chanting these glories. And Lord Ramachandra, and Hanuman, who's always feeling great separation from his worshipful Lord, finds solace in always hearing and chanting these transcendental narrations of Lord Ramachandra in that place. And there in Kimpurusha Varsha, Hanuman is seen to be always rendering very personal service to his worshipful Lord, a form of deity. Meditating on whenever the Lord wishes to call him to service, then Hanuman will immediately be prepared to go whenever the Lord wishes him to go. But otherwise, Hanuman stays in that place, as described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He stays in that place by the order of the Lord, who ordered him to stay and to remain there. Also, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there is one description given how Hanuman is very chaste and devoted to his worship of his Lord Ramachandra. In fact, Garuda is included in that particular lila, where it was the Supreme Lord who in Dwarka, he requested Garuda, he wanted to teach him a lesson to not become proud of his position. And he requested Garuda to go to Kimpurusha and to tell Hanuman to immediately come to the Lord. And Garuda went to that place where Hanuman was absorbed in his meditation, his service, worship. And he told him that the Supreme Lord of the Yadu dynasty has requested you to come immediately to Dwarka. And when Hanuman heard that request, he paid no attention to it whatsoever. He just continued his meditation and his service. And Garuda was disturbed that Hanuman has not listened to me. I'm carrying an order from the Lord to come. So he became very angry at Hanuman, and Hanuman, simply with his tail, struck Garuda. And by the strength of his tail, he sent Garuda all the way back through the sky, and he landed back in Dwarka, where the Lord received him, smiling, to see Garuda lying there. And Garuda, of course, the Lord said, what happened? And Garuda explained what happened. He said, this time you should return and go, and you should tell Hanuman that Ramachandra, Lakshman, and Sita, they are waiting for him. So then Garuda returned with that order. As soon as he told Hanuman, then Hanuman immediately ran to that place. And the Lord had actually transformed himself into Ramachandra. And he requested Balaram to transform himself into Lakshman. And requested Satyabhama to turn into Sita, but she couldn't do it. So therefore he arranged for Rukmini. And then the three of them stood there, and Hanuman immediately appeared in that place. And when the Lord, of course, saw Hanuman appear, he immediately was so pleased by his jaist's desire to render service to him, then he was prepared to bestow upon him any benediction to fulfill his desires of Hanuman. So we understand that this is one of the characteristics of Hanuman, is that his head is sold out to the service of Lord Ramachandra. It's also nicely described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, of course, if we know the example of Murari Gupta, who was the incarnation of Hanuman. And in a couple of places, I think there is an example. I think then when Lord Chaitanya was speaking to Rupa and Sanatana, and then they were telling them how they tried to convince Anupam, their brother, to come and to take shelter of the Lord. And they said that at one point they thought they had converted him and convinced him to take shelter of worship of Lord Krishna. And he was prepared to be accepted and initiated by the Krishna mantra. But then that night he cried all night long and could not possibly give up the feet of his worshipful Lord. And when Lord Chaitanya heard this, he said, actually, as glorious as that person who cannot give up the lotus feet of his worshipful Lord, and glorious is that master, right, who will never abandon his servant, one who will always take shelter of him. And he says, even if that devotee, if he somehow falls, gives up the shelter and falls away, he says, glorious is that master who will come and grabs him by the hair and pulls him back. Right? Such is the determination of such a bhakta as Murari Gupta, or as none other than Hanuman. And of course, elsewhere in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya himself tested Murari Gupta and told him, tried to appeal to Murari Gupta to, by describing the very sweet characteristics and qualities of Lord Krishna. And he even ordered him to render service. And Murari Gupta went home that night, and that night he simply cried all night long. Mm-hmm. He tried very hard to follow the order, but he cried, and he was thinking, better I simply give up my body. I cannot possibly continue to live. So better I just simply die. Mm-hmm. And the following morning, Murari Gupta returned and bowed down before the lotus feet of the Lord, clasping his lotus feet and crying, saying that all night long he simply cried. He says, I've sold my head to the service of Lord Raghunath, and it is not possible for me to give up such service. He said, therefore, let me give up my body before you immediately. And then Lord Chaitanya said that he was simply told him to give up the service. He was simply testing his devotion. And he was so much very, very satisfied by the fixed determination to worship his worshipful Lord. Lord Chaitanya was so satisfied and glorified Murari Gupta in this way to all the Vaishnavas assembled of his fixed devotion and service to Lord Raghunath. So it is established that he was none other than the incarnation of Hanuman. And here we see in these prayers that Hanuman is glorifying, he's residing perpetually on Kimpurusha Loka, absorbed in service and glorifying the Lord with these appropriate prayers. And in this prayer he says that the Lord, and Srila Prabhupada also very nicely establishes in the commentary how Lord Ramachandra is none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself. And therefore we should not make any distinction. And he's Hanuman is glorifying the Lord, whose pure form, Satchidananda Vigraha, is completely uncontaminated by the modes of material nature. He can be perceived by pure consciousness. In the Vedanta, he's described as being one without a second. So many verses are there about Krishna, who is transcendental to the modes of material nature. He never comes in contact with the modes of material nature. He's never influenced in any way, just as Krishna and Krishna's his name are never influenced by material nature. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Puna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Bhinava Nama Namino. As this verse describes, that Krishna's name is transcendentally blissful, it bestows all spiritual benedictions because it is Krishna himself, the reservoir of pleasure. It is not a material name under any circumstance. It is no less powerful than Krishna himself. Krishna's name is never contaminated by material qualities and never comes under the influence of the modes of material nature. Krishna's name is always eternal and liberated, and this is because Krishna and his name are non-different. So just as Krishna and his name is non-different, also is described here that the Supreme Lord Ramachandra, he is also described as being one without a second. He is untouched by contamination. He's transcendental. He has no material activities. He has no material form. He has no material name. Only in pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness, can one perceive the transcendental form of the Lord. And then Hanuman prays, "Let us be firmly fixed at the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto those transcendental lotus feet." So, such is the nature of the Supreme Lord. What is that verse in Srimad Bhagavata? Etad ishanam ishasya prakritim sto mahadgunai na yujate sadatma star yata buddhis tad ashraya. Etad ishanam ishasya. This is the nature, this is the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he is never contaminated, he is never affected by material qualities. Even though he is in contact with them. Prabhupada explains in the commentary how Krishna is in contact with material qualities. Because, as we said, the Supreme Lord is never in contact with the material nature. But this verse explains that he's never affected by material qualities, even though he's in contact with them. And says, similarly, the devotees of the Lord, who always take shelter of the Supreme Lord, they are also never influenced by material qualities. So the Lord, he is never affected by, he's always transcendental material qualities, even though he's in contact. And Prabhupada explains in the commentary that the Supreme Lord's contact with material qualities is that he's the source of everything. How can material nature exist without Krishna? So that is his contact. But otherwise, he's always, his activities, his pastimes, they're always, everything he does, even if he, and Prabhupada explains in the commentary, even when Krishna comes and he's apparently killing demons who are definitely under the influence of material qualities, but that activity of itself is never, he's never contacting material nature. And all of his dealings in the material world, everything he does is completely transcendental. And therefore, in the same way, in the pastimes of the Lord, whenever he comes to this world, whatever his pastimes he performs, just as Lord Ramachandra, as will be described in the next verse, he had to undergo many tribulations as a result of Sita Devi being kidnapped by Ravana. But still, all these were meant to teach a particular purpose, or teach a particular example. But he himself is the Supreme Lord. Sita Devi, she is the goddess of fortune. And Prabhupada explains also in the commentary that Sita Devi, being the goddess of fortune, she could have never been captured by Ravana because she also cannot be touched. This is the Supreme Lord cannot be touched by anything material. In the same way, demons such as Ravana, they cannot touch Sita Devi. Here's that whole story, actually. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, who was it? Ramdas Vipra? Yes. When he heard, he was always crying, lamenting, because
that when he heard that Sita was kidnapped by Ravana, caused such great lamentation within his heart. But when Lord Chaitanya went to, where was it? He went to, and he got to that scripture from the, I can't remember the place, Maharaj, where was it? Rameshram, that's right, it was in Rameshram. From the Kurma Purana, right? He read in that verse in the palm leaf how that Sita Devi was not actually taken by Ravana, but actually Ravana simply took a false form, Maya Sita. That when Sita Devi was actually, when Ravana tried to take her, she meditated upon, I think it was Agni, who came and protected her and took her away and then left behind a Maya form. And it was that form that Ravana had took. And when Lord Chaitanya read this, he actually took the page right out. He wanted to bring it back just simply to alleviate the distress of this Vaishnava who was always in lamentation thinking that Sita had been touched by that sinful Ravana. So Lord Chaitanya, he took the original page. But before he took the original page, he arranged for it to be copied on another leaf. And so it was left there. And he took the original page simply to convince him. Just see. And when he read that, really he began crying. So satisfied. Because he had such deep faith that how is it possible that Sita Devi could be touched by the hands of Ravana. So the Lord can never come in contact with material qualities. And similarly, the devotees of the Lord who always take shelter, they also will not come in contact. They'll not be influenced by material qualities. They will not come in touch with the modes of material nature. So, we see here how the Lord is being always situated in the transcendental platform. That means that whatever he does is transcendental. And it is always beyond the influence of the three modes of material nature. And it's described here that the Lord is one without a second. Just as it's described in the Vishnu Purana. What is it? Tasya karyam karanam chavijate. The chabaji kastra jishate. Parasya shakta, well, I forget the verse. I quote it so many times. Huh? Matak smiti gyanam apohanam cha. Svabhaviki gyanam balakriya cha. I quoted two different verses there. Matak smiti gyanam apohanam cha was that Krishna is the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. But this verse describes that how the Supreme Lord, there's no one equal to him, no one greater than him. There's nothing for him to do, for everything is done very systematically, simply by his desire. Everything is arranged perfectly. But again, there's no one equal to him, no one greater than him. He is one without a second. That means that he is supreme, and he is always transcendental to this material world. And his pastimes, whatever he does, they have no connection with material nature. And when the devotees take shelter in hearing the descriptions of the Supreme Lord, they also become transcendental to the influence. The Lord protects them. That is the means by which the devotees become protected by the influence of material qualities. As Hanuman is always protected by the Lord, because Hanuman is always absorbed in prayer, always absorbed in service within his heart, always absorbed in meditation. And therefore, by that constant remembrance of the Lord, the Lord actually constantly remembers his devotee and accepts the devotee under the protection of his internal energy. The verse that is quoted here in the commentary, there's one verse quoted from, what is it? Yam evaisha vinute tena labhya. I think that's a verse also that Nayamatma pravachanena labhya. Namedasa, namedaya na bahuna shutena.
right? The Supreme Lord cannot be understood by expert explanations, by vast knowledge, nor even by much hearing. The Supreme Lord reveals himself to one who he himself chooses. To such a person, he manifests his transcendental form. Yeah. And there is a commentary which very nicely explains this verse and the subsequent verse, how the Supreme Lord actually responds or reveals himself to the devotee and accepts his devotee into his entourage, into his association, and brings him under the protection of his internal potency. And when one reads this verse, it's described that one will conclude that Krishna will only reveal himself to one who he himself chooses. And therefore, Krishna being completely independent, that is the sole cause for actually having the Lord reveal oneself to him. If Krishna chooses, by his own independent will, then he may do so. But I think it was Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushan, he quotes this verse and the next verse together. And he says, the next verse says, Nayam Atma Balahanena Labhya, Nachat Pramadat Tapiso Vapya Lingat. That the Supreme Lord can never be attained by those who have no spiritual strength, to those who are careless, and to those whose austerities are inappropriate. The Supreme Lord can be attained only to those who constantly strive to achieve him by the right means. Such persons enter the spiritual world. So Valadeva Vijayabhushan takes these two verses together. He says, taken together, it describes that the Lord chooses, but who does the Lord choose? The Lord chooses a devotee, his devotee who has devotion. And he says, what is the symptom? He says in this second verse, what is devotional service? Spiritual strength is described as non-different from devotional service. And what is the characteristic of one who has spiritual strength? Right? What is the character of a devotional service? It is that he has spiritual strength. He's always careful. Right? He's always careful in his endeavor to his approach to the Lord. And his austerities are always appropriate. He said, that is devotional service. So one who actually has spiritual strength, and then he quotes a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vashe Kurvanti Mad Bhaktya, Sat Striya Sat Patim Yata. So he says that, just as this is a verse is spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which says that just as a chaste wife will bring her saintly husband under her control, in the same way, my devotees, they bring me under my control. Right? So just as a chaste wife, her saintly husband is controlled by her devotion, service to him. Right? So in the same way, the devotee is controlled by the Supreme Lord. And how does a devotee control the Supreme Lord? By his devotion. And what is the symptom of his devotion? Just as we described the characteristics of Hanuman and the characteristics of Murari Gupta, what is the symptom of their devotion? Is they could not give up remembrance of their of the worshipful Lord. Not for a moment could they stop thinking about them. Not for a moment could they stop serving them. And therefore, even if such a person, as Lord Chaitanya said, even if such a person may apparently fall away and give up my shelter, fortunate, glorious is that Lord who grabs him by the hair and pulls him back. That is the symptom of love that exists between the Lord and his devotees. And therefore, the devotee is also, who's always fixed in remembrance of the Lord, he'll never become influenced by material qualities because the Lord will protect him. The Lord will protect him by such influence. Just as the Lord is never contaminated by material qualities, his pastimes are always internal. In the same way, the activities of his devotees, who are always fixed in remembrance of the Lord, they're also as good as the Supreme Lord. And they're also under the influence of the Lord's internal potency. And therefore, they are also under the protection of that internal potency of the Lord. and never come under the influence of the Lord's material qualities. This is the symptom of the Lord's Yogamaya protection, which Prabhupada actually speaks about here in this commentary. He actually, in some place, I can't remember it was, he describes about the position of Yogamaya and how that Yogamaya is protecting the devotee of the Lord. What is that verse? Naham prakasha shavasha yogamaya samavata mudayamna. That verse describes that I'm never manifest to those who are foolish and unintelligent. For them, I'm covered by my eternal creative potency, yogamaya. And so the whole world does not know me. I'm unborn and infallible. So yogamaya, of course, manifested in the material world, is maya, mahamaya, as Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Describes how Yogamaya expands herself into the material world in the form of Mahamaya. She covers, creates forgetfulness of this position of the Supreme Lord. But in the spiritual world, Yogamaya, she makes all these different arrangements for the devotees of the Lord to be always under her protection. Yeah. And in this way, the devotees can never fall from being, because the Lord is always protecting them by his internal potency. And they can never fall from that position. So many places, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says that the devotee can never leave that place again. Janma kama chemaitivyam, even yoveti tatvata. Right? One who simply understands the transcendental nature of my appearance, my activities in this world, they do not have to take their birth again, they achieve my eternal abode. And Krishna also explains in the Bhagavad Gita, when one goes there, he never comes back. Tad dhamma paramamama. Right? The supreme abode is unmanifested and infallible. It's the supreme destination. When one goes there, he never comes back. That is my supreme abode. That is because the devotee is protected from the influence of material nature. He does not know even about the existence of something called Maya. How can he possibly give up the lotus feet of the Lord if he does not know even the existence of something of Maya? So the Lord takes his devotee and protects him in that way. And Prabhupada even gives the example. He says that the devotee of the Lord, who's always fixed in remembrance of the Lord, he says the Lord, he considers a devotee to be such like a precious jewel. He says if somebody has a very precious, valuable jewel, then he'll always hold it in his hand very tightly. So he'll never lose it. And he says in the same way, the Lord always holds his devotee, who are always fixed in remembrance of him very tightly, so the devotee will never fall away from his position. So anyone who becomes situated on the platform of loving pure devotional service by this constant remembrance of the Lord, that is the safest position. And therefore, we see in this example here that of Hanuman's position, of how he's always fixed in remembrance, always fixed in service of the Lord, and can never in any way be deviated by his service to his worshipful Lord in any way, even by the example we gave of Garuda coming and trying to take him someplace else before someone else, he would not go. Only if Lord Ramachandra would call him, he was ready to go. So that type of meditation and absorption is the quality or characteristic of the devotee which binds the Lord to his devotee. And therefore the example is given that just as a very chaste and devoted wife brings her saintly husband under control, in the same way the devotees who are always fixed with thoughts and remembrance of the Supreme Lord, who are always chanting his glories and always remembering him, worshipping him, Krishna in so many places, he says, they are most intimately united with me in devotional service, and I consider them the highest of all. And therefore, such devotees will always be under the Lord's protection and never influenced by the three modes of material nature. If we wish to come under that protection, of course, how do we come under that protection, especially for those who are still influenced by the modes of material nature? This question is oftentimes asked, oh, yes, it is so nice to hear about how the Lord will always protect his devotees. But what is my position? How will I ever get that type of protection that we hear about, that all the pure devotees of the Lord, they get. How will I ever be able to achieve that position? And therefore, sometimes it may be a cause of doubt in our minds or within our hearts, that how can I ever get that kind of protection from the Lord? I'm too fallen. My mind is too much attracted still by material, the glitter of material nature. I still identify with the material body, as Prabhupada spoke about here, how the condition, the jivatma still identifies with the material world and material qualities. He thinks himself to be American, Indian, German, but the Lord is always transcendental. So I still have some type of identification. But in so many places it's described that the best way to come under the protection is by hearing. If we wish to come under the protection of the Supreme Lord, then we have to constantly hear, glorify, and remember. What is that verse in the Bhagavan Ishvaro Hari, Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha, Smartavya Chichchatavayam? What's the beginning of that? Tasmat Bharata Savatma, Bhagavan Ishvaro. Yes. What? O descendant of King Bharata, one who desires to become free from all miseries, he must hear about, he must glorify, he must always remember the Supreme Lord, who is the Supersoul in the heart of all living beings and is the Savior from all miseries. Right? That was the answer given to Parikshit Maharaj when he asked the question, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? Right? He must constantly glorify, hear, remember Krishna, the Supersoul, who is situated within all the hearts of everyone. This is the way that one comes under the protection of the Supreme Lord. One must cultivate this desire. In the same way, in the Bhagavatam, the example is also given that in that place where pure devotees are chanting the glories of the Lord, following the rules and regulations, in that place, if one gets a chance to hear the topics of the Supreme Lord, which are flowing just like the waves of a river, then one will become forget about all the necessities of life, such as hunger and thirst, and one will become free from all kinds of illusion, lamentation, and fear, simply by continuous hearing. That is Narada Muni's speaking in this way, describing how the devotee becomes freed from the influence of material qualities. Just as a person who gets caught in the waves of the river and is influenced by the waves of the river, he cannot avoid that influence. In the same way, when a devotee gets caught in the waves of the discussions of the Lord, he is influenced in a positive way. Right? Prabhupada describes it as an infection. Right? We become infected. It's like if a person comes in contact with another person who has a disease, he can become infected by that disease. In the same way, if we come in contact with a person who's infected with a desire to hear and chant the glories of the Lord, then we become similarly infected. And gradually, we become protected by material affection, by the disease of material nature, disease which needs to be destroyed and needs to be cured. Shukadeva Goswami said to Parikshit Maharaj that this is the right medicine. Huh? Bhava Ashoda, right? Bhava Ashoda. This is the right medicine. Discussions of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when heard between the spiritual master and disciple, this is the right medicine for those who are undergoing repeated birth and death in the material world. This is the medicine that one has to take. And therefore, who will fail to hear such descriptions except a butcher or one who's killing himself? Right? So this is the medicine to become cured from the disease. Ednechi o shodi maya nashi baro lagi harinama mahamancha lao tumi magi Bhaktivinoda Thakur also describes this is the medicine. Because Krishna and his name, they are non-different, they are always transcendental. If we take the medicine by chanting Krishna's name, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, we become cured from the disease. Just as Rupa Goswami describes that the transcendental pastimes, activities, and name of the Supreme Lord, they're all completely transcendental and naturally sweet, just like sugar candy. But of one who's been afflicted by the jaundice of vidya, he cannot taste anything sweet. But it is very wonderful that if one carefully chants these names, carefully, again, we see careful, as we quoted in that verse, careful determination, not careless. Careful determination. If we carefully chant these street names, then what happens? The natural relish awakens within his tongue, and the disease becomes destroyed at the root. So careful. Be very, very careful with how we utilize our tongue. We carefully control our tongue by forcing ourselves to chant and to speak. We carefully control our ears by becoming very, very attentive to hearing. And when Krishna sees the devotee endeavoring in this way, I was having a discussion just recently. I was sitting with Parthasarathy Prabhu in Udupi together. He was giving us such a nice example. He says, just like if you are here and a devotee is next door, and you may have committed some offense, and you want to be forgiven, and you want to rectify yourself, and if you're sitting in this place, and Vaishnava is next door, and he sees that you're always lamenting, crying, if he sees that you're performing austerities, wanting so much forgiveness, he said, how can he stay there after some time? How can he stay in that place? How can he not come and neglect? So he's giving this as an example for a devotee who's praying, who's desiring to hear and desires to chant. How can the Lord neglect him? He can never neglect. If he knows, he's in his heart, and he knows within our heart, I'm trying to control my tongue. I'm trying to hear about you. I'm trying to speak about you. Sometimes I find myself not doing it, but as soon as I find myself, then I'm trying again. I'm making that endeavor. How can Krishna, in any way, who's within our heart, ever neglect the efforts of the devotee who's making such endeavors? He'll manifest. He'll appear. He'll come to that place. Naham tishtami vaikunte yoginam hidayeshuva tatva tishtami narada yatra gayanti madbhakta. He'll come to that place. He can never neglect. So therefore, that is the best way to come under the protection of the Lord's internal potency. And if we take shelter in the association of devotees, hearing the pastimes of the Lord, then we have hope that even though we still have some contamination or contact with material qualities, that still we can come under the protection of the Lord's internal potency. Just as the Lord is never influenced by material qualities, in the same way those who take shelter of the Lord will never be influenced by material qualities. This is the example given here in these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, of Hanuman and his prayers and his service to Lord Ramachandra. And he is describing, I think this chapter is describing the residence of Kimpurusha, and then he's going to go on to describe the residence of Bhartvarsha. And what is he going to say? What is the great value for the residence of Bhartvarsha? What is their shelter? What is their protection? What is their fortune? The fortune of the residents of Bhartvarsha is they get the opportunity to associate with the Vaishnava. And because they get the opportunity to come in contact and associate with Vaishnavas, they also can achieve the same destination, just as Hanuman achieved in Kimpurusha Loka by his meditation. Also the residents of Bhartvarsha, they also get the same opportunity. This is going to be described here in this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we'll stop here. Any questions? Comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna, when we are distributing books of Srila Prabhupada, what should we tell them that will convince them to buy the book?
What should we?
Tell them that will convince them to buy the book.
It's not what we tell them, it's how we tell them. That's the most important thing. What actually impresses somebody is his motive. If somebody has a sincere motive within his heart, I want you to take this book. I want you to experience the mercy, the kindness of Srila Prabhupada. I want you to somehow experience his mercy that he gave to everyone in the form of his books. What you say is not as important as what you feel in your heart. And therefore, devotees can sell books, and they have. And sometimes we see so many examples. You know, the devotees, their devotees will tell stories. You know, when they were, especially devotees. I remember when the library party was there in the airport, and Sankirtan party was there in O'Hare Airport many years ago. You know, people would watch the devotees and see how they're able to approach one person after the next and convince them to take a book. You know, and sometimes businessmen will watch. And they'll say, and they will go over and say, "Hey, here's my card." You know, they are convinced that if I get you on my working for my company, definitely sales will increase. Right? Many examples. I've seen somebody do that to my God Pragosh, actually, when we were distributing books together in Logan Airport in Boston. And then practically everyone who was approaching was taking a book. And even though somebody who... Pragosh, one time, I remember he approached somebody and he just said, "I want you to have this book." he just looked him in his eyes. And the man looked at him, he said, "I know." And he said, "You just want my money, don't you?" And Pragosh just looked in his eyes and said, "No, this is a book of my spiritual master. He's very kindly, it talks about love of God. I want you to have this book. I want you." And the man actually, Pragosh was speaking with such conviction. The man reached in his pocket and I swear this is exactly what happened. He reached in his pocket, he opened his wallet, he said, "I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't want this book." And Pragosh said to him, "I just want you to have this book so much." And the man took it and he said, "I don't know why I'm giving this to you." And he did it. And he just gave it. And Pragosh, you know, thanked him so much. He said, "Thank you." He said, "May God bless you." And he shook his hand. And the man just stood there and said, "I don't know. I don't want this book." But that's just an example. All right, there's so many examples. But the point is what we say, of course we should never tell lies. Prabhupada didn't want that we should tell lies. But if we're so motivated within our heart with a desire that we want somebody to have Krishna, this is the heart of a preacher. Isn't that what a preacher does when he gives a lecture? Isn't that what a preacher does when he goes out and he gives a lecture at the college? He's praying to Krishna within the hearts. "I want them to hear you." He's praying like that. He has to. Otherwise, don't let me stand in the way of them and you. He's praying like that. "I don't want to get in the way. You're in everyone's heart. Let me speak your message. If I get in the way, they won't get you." Therefore, they're praying to the Lord within their heart. That is preacher. He's speaking to the Lord within their heart. "Please, don't let me step in the way. Please, let me convince him to take this book so that he can hear you and hear Srila Prabhupada." That's preacher. So that is more important than, you know, what we talk about in the book. You can say, I used to go out with all the book distributors many years ago to the Vaisheshika Prabhu. I went out with him once. We went to a Grand Central Station in New York City. It was back in 75, 76. And Vaisheshika went up to one man. He just took his hand and he slapped. He said, "How are you?" And you know, the man... And he said, "I have a book about love of God. Please take this book." And then you said, "You look just like my grandfather. I have such affection for my grandfather." And the man just kind of And he said, this is a book about love of God. You want to love God, don't you? Everybody wants to love God. Please take this book. And he was just so exuberant. That's all he said. That's all he said. And the man just immediately took the book and gave a donation. He didn't have to say anything. Just so much convinced. What was he convinced of? We're not salesmen. Prabhupada said no ordinary salesman can sell these books. It is not a sales technique that sells Prabhupada's books. It's the conviction in our hearts that this is the most valuable jewel. This is Krishna. Coming from the lips of his pure devotee, it is the most valuable jewel. I remember once that one devotee told a story. He was approaching devotees. He was telling the story about another devotee who was distributing books at an intersection. And he didn't have time to say much to people. So he would stop and people would come in the car. And he reached in and he handed a book. He said, I want you to have this. And he said, oh, actually, no. You don't want to take this. This book is too valuable. I said, maybe I don't want to give it to you. And that's all he said to the person. Because he didn't have time to say much. He'd show the book. He said, actually, no. This book's too valuable. Maybe I should... What do you got there? No, it's okay. You don't want it. It's just too valuable. There's no price you could possibly pay for it. And then people were taking books. Why? Because he's convinced in his heart of the value of the book. So that's what distributes Srila Prabhupada's books. Not what we say, but what we have in our heart when we're saying it. And we don't have to make up anything, stories or nothing. Just simply speak. What we've found, the great value, the great jewel, appreciation of what we found in Srila Prabhupada's books, and speak with that same conviction, and then leave it up to Krishna in their heart. That is all. And a devotee who can preach like that, who depends on Krishna within their heart, he can be unaffected. It's the same point, how a devotee is unaffected by material qualities, as we talked about. How to be unaffected by material qualities? How to become unaffected by anger when somebody doesn't take or somebody insults? Right? That's another thing that devotees have to... That when they see these salesmen, when they see the devotees, how a devotee can be totally unaffected. I remember once myself also being on book distribution. Somebody took a can of beer and poured it all over me. But I was not affected. I just stood there. In fact, I remember, I think I told the story. I think it was at Rath Yatra. Who was the Rath Yatra last year I went to? When I told the story about when I was in the airplane and the man made fun of my sweater. Huh? Nigri. Yes. The first thing he said to me, he was kind of making fun of me. He says, don't you know your sweater doesn't match your clothes? And I said, no, thank you very much. I didn't know that. And then later, afterwards, we were talking. He was, you know, overwhelmed at how I wasn't disturbed when he said that. So we have to be unaffected by insult, fame, right? What is that verse? Taraskrita vipatlabda kshatak shipta hatahapi nasyatat pati kurvanti tad bhakta kavayopihi. Devotees of the Lord are so very forbearing that even they are cheated, insulted, neglected, disturbed, cursed, or even killed, they're never inclined to avenge themselves. That's the characteristic. Why? How can he be so peaceful? Because in his heart, he's always depending on the Lord. He has the protection of the Lord, and the Lord protects him from the influence of material qualities, such as anger, lust, greed. So this is how we can be effective in our preaching. And distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. That answer your question? Okay. I think we should probably end here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.